On February 14, 2018, a former student of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, walked in carrying loaded weapons, notably an AR-15 assault rifle, and summarily gunned down 17 folks. And it was the seventh such incident this year in the United States and the 188th since 2000. We are by far the leading industrialized nation, and perhaps one of the leading nations in general, in this sort of murderous rampage. It's an issue that we have to deal with as a country. We have to question not the motives of the individuals who, week after week, month after month, year after year, perpetrate these bloody massacres. We have to ask ourselves, why are there 300 million guns in this country? Who are we protecting? Who has invaded our nation? Since December of 1941, I don't think anybody. So what are we protecting? What are we afraid of? About a week after the Stoneman Douglas massacre, I sat down with Mr. Chucky Brown. He's got two teenage daughters, he's a gun owner, and we talked about the issue, why he owns guns, and his reaction to all of it. Please don't forget to subscribe to the Ubuntu Radio podcast on Podomatic and on iTunes. Add comments, suggestions, questions, so that we can work on making this more informative and a better experience for you. Enjoy. Another episode of Ubuntu Radio. I'm once again talking with Mr. Chucky Brown. We had a conversation probably late last year?
Sometime, I can't remember the exact time. But yeah, it wasn't too long ago. It doesn't seem like it was that long ago.
That was long ago, man. So for those who don't know, Mr. Brown was a fellow NC State alum. Mm-hmm. Also played in the league, that is the NBA, for many, many years. How many? Close to 18?
13 years.
Yeah, 13. Coached.
Yep.
In the NBA Association, and now is, I mean, retired, man. Yeah, man. Living the life. Got the 5.0 outside, 70,000 miles on it. Living the good life. When we're, and I enjoyed the conversation so much because it's something that's resonating the past couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. More than just an athlete. One of the reasons I wanted to get in touch with Mr. Brown is I read his feed on Facebook. And I know he's honest about the kinds of things that he sees going on in the country and the world. He's not afraid to speak out. And we talked about on the podcast that you played in the league in an era where people really didn't do that. The right. leaders right. in the NBA, mm-hmm. I think whether they were beholden to sneaker companies or just professional athletes got to keep the damn mouth shut,
right.
which has never been the history in this country because right. we've always spoken out. But for whatever reason, at that particular point when you were in, people kept their mouth shut and kept going. But now, my friend, you ain't doing that. So I wake up this morning, 7 o'clock, and the first thing that pops up on my Facebook feed is you getting into it
right.
with a dude about the unfortunate incident in Florida high school.
Mm-hmm.
I think 17 young people died at the hand of a gun.
Right.
At the hand of a madman, the hand of a gun. So you were going back and forth about that. So anybody who's not reading that, what was the conversation, the exchange between you and that gentleman? And who was he?
Basically, it's a guy from high school. He was younger than me, or is still younger than me. But it was basically, he was suggesting that teachers be armed and that there should be more guns and that would be the deterrent mm-hmm. for, you know, the school shootings and that there should be no ban on weapons. And I think that's how it started, because I was saying that Clinton had put a ban on the assault rifles. Then Bush let the, I forget the name of the bill, but he just let it expire mm-hmm. when he didn't have to do that, you know, and then the assault rifles would have stayed out, mm-hmm. you know. But that was the start of it. He was saying that there should be more guns, and I was saying that, you know, it would be stupid to have teachers armed. You know, I said that basically I think that more security, more police officers in the school. Right now, you know, my daughters are in school, and I talk to the police officer when I go pick my daughter up. I talk to the police officer that's on duty there. So I think that depending on the amount of kids at the school, the amount of officers, you know, okay, one officer for every 100 kids or whatever it is. Having a police officer there, having a couple of police officer cars sitting out there, mm-hmm. would be more of a deterrent than having teachers with guns. I think it's just stupid. You know, and then another girl chimed in that I went to high school with, saying that she's all for, you know, teachers having guns. And it's hard enough for teachers now to teach.
Right.
Teachers have a lot on their plate, and then they're not getting paid like they should. You know, this has been a conversation for a long time, how teachers haven't been getting paid like they should. But that was basically the start of the conversation. And those people are usually really easy to shut down because, you know, a lot of their facts come from Fox News. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, then when you start doing your own little research, like, he was quick to throw up how all the murder in Chicago, but then you look at the top or the liberal ran states, how to murder, all this stuff. But then if you go and actually read up and do some research, you find that the leading gun violence states are Republican states. So, you know, those people are really
alternate facts. Give them those alternate facts.
You know what I'm saying?
So
they give them those alternate facts. So they're usually easy to shut down. And the good thing about Jerry, who was the dude I got into it with, is that, you know, at the end of the conversation, he said, well, I was wrong. He told me he was wrong.
So when did it, because I didn't follow the whole thread.
Right.
When did it turn for him?
Because
one of the things he kept going back to, and I think another person, maybe this lady you mentioned, they always invoke the Second Amendment and Constitution.
Right.
So after that, I said, all right, I want to get Chuck Young to talk about this.
Right.
So when did it turn for him in the comp? Because again, it didn't follow the whole thread.
Right. It turned for him when he started talking about Chicago, Detroit, and New York are leading in violence, blah, 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 blah. I said, well, okay, New York, I know the crime is down. I don't have to look that up. Let me look up these other things, and I'm going to get back to you. So when I got back to him, that's when he admitted that he was wrong. You know, so, and he's trying to say that, well, suicide shouldn't count as gun violence. I'm like, can't pick and choose what you want to omit.
Right.
Suicide, if you use pills, that's not gun violence.
Right.
If you use a knife, that's not gun violence.
Right.
If you kill yourself with a gun,
that's fucking gun violence.
That's gun violence. That's gun violence. So that's where it turned for him, and he admitted that he was wrong.
Through the pain, and through the stress, I know somehow it has to get better. Yeah. Sometimes you get left, left with nothing at all, still. I know it will.
There's facts, there's damn facts, and then there's statistics.
Right.
But we're going to take this one because it seems to be a statistic all across the board.
Mm-hmm.
There are 300 million guns in this country. There are about 300 million people.
Mm-hmm.
About one gun for every person. And again, when we talked on the podcast, you grew up in New York City, and then moved to North Carolina. I grew up in New York City from age 9 to 18, late 80s, crack epidemic, not the best place in the world to be. Thankfully, I wasn't old enough to be in situations where guns and those things come up. But did I see that? Did I see the older guys in the neighborhood? Blah, blah, blah. I saw that stuff. So when people talk about this, and I understand your reality down here in Eastern North Carolina for that dude might be different.
Oh, yeah.
But for our reality, growing up in New York City, our relationship to guns is significantly different. And so a lot of people then say, well, that's responsibility. My dad taught me we go hunting, all that stuff. But so address that, like the relationship to guns, because he brought up the point in Detroit, in Chicago, but that's not Eastern North Carolina. Right. That's not going hunting. Right. That's not. So, I mean, you, I think you understand what I'm saying. So what is that?
Well, for me, you know, my father always had guns, but I was always told to stay away from them. You know,
Your father was military.
My father
was
military.
So he was trained in the use of that stuff.
Yep, all that stuff. So I was always taught or told to stay away from, you know, guns and stuff like that. So, you know, when he had, you know, we had guns in New York. So I knew where they were, but I stayed away from them.
Mm-hmm.
you know, we're not taught to be around the gun culture, not the people that I know. Only time I was around guns, shotguns, was when I came to South Carolina and I went hunting with my uncles.
Gotcha.
They taught me how to shoot a shotgun and stuff like that. And my father was cool with that because I was down here going hunting.
Gotcha.
You know, that's different. That's totally different. So I didn't really grow up in the, you know, where you had, you know, you had the one time a few years ago, I don't know if you remember, where the 9-year-old girl was at the shooting range. She's like 9 years old shooting the Uzi, and she shot the instructor.
I didn't.
You remember that? Yeah, I have to look it up and send it to you. But yeah, it was in Arizona. It happened in Arizona where the girl was at a shooting range, and she had an Uzi. And she ended up shooting the instructor. This was a couple years ago this happened. They had it on YouTube. Hopefully they didn't take it down. But yeah, they showed the video. But like, you know, we wasn't 9 years old with a gun, 10 years old. No, that, you know, I really didn't own my first gun until I was probably 24.
What was the reason for purchasing it?
Just basically, you know, coming up, I knew my father had one in the house. I wanted to have one in the house. And just basically to have one for my own personal safety. I didn't get my concealed carry until, I'm 49 now. I didn't get my concealed carry until I was 47. So it wasn't like, you know, I was riding around in a car. My pistol stayed at home.
Gotcha.
The only reason why I got my concealed carry was because, you know, I felt like, you know, sometimes when I was doing my NBA scouting is when I basically got it. Because I would drive down these little towns where, you know, you hear how some of them think. And I tell my wife, I just want to make it home.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I'm not looking for no problems. I just want to make it home. So that, the only time I would really take my pistol with me is when I go into these little towns. You know, a lot of people don't know about the sundown town. That's when they will get wild, but they don't fight, they kill. At the Wild Wild West. After sundown, they don't want to see black people walking around. I read up on all these things, and it might be conspiracy, but I'm not going to be the one that they chain to the back of the truck and drag,
right,
and his head pop off. So that was the only reason why I got my concealed carry. Just like a track star dying, nah, I ran through the backyard trying to get in my building, saying, why in the heck won't somebody kill them one day? The fellas got together, they vowed that no one would ever come in our block and terrorize us. The gangs that used to do it, now they idolize the guns.
Fisher said you got one when you were 24, and you got the concealed carry at 47 a couple years ago. Have you ever had to use it basically in the ways that you thought you would have needed to use it?
Nah, I've never had to pull it because they teach you in the class that if you pull it, you got to use it. So I really don't want to do that. I don't want to take nobody's life.
So what does that mean? Is that then justifying police action when they do it? If you pull it, you have to use it.
I think it's a justification for those that want to say that they feel like their life is in danger. Now, of course, I've gotten in, you know, you get into little arguments or whatever, but it's nothing that serious to where you feel like it's going to be anything physical. I've never been one to, you know, the first thing I want to do is fight somebody. You know what I'm saying? If I'm in a disagreement with somebody, you know, I try to see their side of it and be like, oh man, you got to see my side too. You know what I'm saying? Try to laugh about it a little bit, but be serious. But I've never had to pull it out. I've only gone to the shooting range just to practice shooting, you know, just in case something happened, which I don't want to happen.
Right.
You know, some people walk around, you know, like, you know, they can't wait for this to go down. That's, you know, that if you feel like you could take a life so easy, you don't need to be walking around here. That's just how I feel. If I'm out somewhere and say 5 or 6 guys want to surround me, I'm pulling it out and I'm going to go ahead and skeet on them. You know what I'm saying? That's what I got to do. But because then I do feel like my life would be in danger. You know what I'm saying? But I know I'm just talking to a guy one-on-one. We have a disagreement. I can very easily just walk away. You know, say, all right, man, do whatever. You know, if it feel like that. You know, but if I'm walking away and somebody's following me, and I do feel threatened, I'm a big guy, so I feel like you're gonna think twice anyway.
See, right, and that's what I wanted to get to.
Right.
Because you have a particular perspective on those kind of confrontation adversarial encounters where, I mean, you're 6'8"?
6'8", yeah.
6'8",
probably 240.
240.
Yeah.
Black man walking around America. You've been this guy for since teenage years, late teenage years.
Right.
So what about the dude And I was having a discussion on my last podcast with a friend of mine. Mm-hmm. We were talking about police training. And he's like, there's an 18-year-old white kid who's from, you know, little town North Carolina who's right. just got his chance to be a police officer. And his first encounter is with a guy that looks like you.
Right.
Everything in his life for 18 years has told him that you're the scariest motherfucker in America.
Right.
So I think naturally you have to disarm people because they're... instinctive reaction to right. you is one of fear.
Right.
Knowing that, and I think, not just knowing that as a big man, but right. also knowing that as a big black man,
right.
that I think, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you walk around with this, I know what you're thinking.
Yep.
And I have to dissuade you, I have to flip you around to let you know I'm not a threat.
That's right.
It's almost easier
mm-hmm.
for a rational, reasonable man like yourself at that size to kind of try to disarm people.
Right.
Rather than get in a situation where, look, man, I got a gun in my pocket. You don't even know this.
Right.
Because before you pull that gun, physically, you're going to get him anyway.
Right. Right.
So what is it when it's flipped? When, okay, Chucky Brown grew up and you're my size. You're a soccer right. player. You're 5'7", you know, 170 or whatever it is. Right, and you right. see you, but uh-huh. he looks white. He and he looks pissed off because right. and he's drunk or whatever it is. So what is that other situation like? And it kind of gives reason for why some of this stuff happens, man. Right. Has there ever been a situation where you're not aware
mm-hmm.
of your size and the impact that can have? Not just on the white person across from you, but just anybody in general.
I mean, there was a situation one time where I was pulling into a parking spot, and it was a young white lady. I was in, but I wasn't parked straight. Mm-hmm. There was another parking spot beside me, so she was pulling in there. So I was just backing out to straighten up. You understand what I'm saying? So she pulled in and she leans on the horn on. So, you know, I got my daughter in the car with me. And I'm like, why is she pulling up? I'm like, what? She rolled her window down. I wasn't even gonna say that. She rolls her window down. So this was in the past year. So I rolled my window down and she's yelling at me, talking about, don't hit me. So I was like, hey, I wasn't gonna hit you. I'm actually parking better to help you out.
Right.
I said, and she was young, so immediately I'm clicking like, you know, I'm tired of these people disrespecting us anyway. You know, the disrespect that I feel like is going on and going on, and just like the people just feel like they could say anything. You know, just like I posted on Facebook about mm-hmm. the NRA woman saying, you know, crying white mothers are a media gold mine or whatever.
When was this?
She said that at a speech yesterday. The NRA lady. Yeah, she was on this morning talking to Allison Camarado.
In public. With a microphone.
And with a microphone. But then someone said to me later that she said, I'm going to go watch the entire speech is what mm-hmm. I'm going to do. But they said she did say something about crying black mothers in Chicago. But then again, you talking about Chicago. I mean, that's all like these right wingers, they throw up is Chicago, Chicago, Chicago. You know, where are the guns coming from? Who's bringing the guns there? The Chicago Police Department has been proven corrupt. So talk about that. I mean, it's just our world is just a mess right now. And I've been kind of like just basically, I really hadn't got on, you know, Trump a whole lot lately. I've just kind of been focused on taking care of mine. You know, me and mine, and just keep it moving because he gonna do what he gonna do anyway.
Right.
No amount of complaining that I do about him, it's not gonna change nothing. Change gonna come, nephew, and you better believe that. I look back on all that I've done to you. My biggest regret, the things that I never could do. Yeah. I see the light now, baby, it's shining through. You mentioned your daughters and teaching them and trying to teach them the right way. Teenage right. girls, right? I got two old? Teenagers. I got 17 and a 14.
I don't think you can escape what happened in Florida
right.
last week. So what conversation's been like, if any,
uh-huh.
with them about that, the older ones?
Well, you know, they don't know that I have guns in
the house. Well, they know now if they listen.
Yeah, well, they know now. They know now because I'm opposed to video. I'm opposed to interview with a kid, so they're going to listen. But. Girl, I swear I'm going to handle my business just like a real man should do. but, you know, like my oldest daughter, you know, she asked me, you know, what do you think about gun laws? gun control laws. And I told him my opinion. I said, you know, I just think that there should be stricter background checks. I said, I'm not against people owning guns. You know, that's all I said to her. So she said, okay. And, you know, my middle daughter, I take her to school every day. And, you know, we have, you know, just little quick 15-minute conversations. And she's totally against guns, you know. And I haven't really said anything about it. Mm-hmm. I don't talk about guns to them, you know, but now that they want to talk about it, you know, we can talk about it, you know. So, but my 14-year-old was just like, you know, I don't know why there has to be guns anyway. You know, why can't people just, if they have an issue, why can't they talk it out of, you know, especially if they're grown up? You know, she said that.
So why?
So I was like, you know, I said, you know, everybody just, you know, just can't, some people just don't know how to communicate, you know, like they need to. So my 10-year-old hasn't really said anything about, you know, the school. But my older two, they definitely have. And like, we get in the car when I go pick her up from school this afternoon, you know, she'll have some stuff where she'll listen to, because she said her friends are Trump supporters. I said, you know, you don't have to.
So again, she's 10.
No, my 14-year-old. Okay, this is my 14-year-old. My 14-year-old says her friends are Trump supporters. So I said, you know, that's fine. You know, it's fine to be different than people and have different friends. That's fine, you know. There's nothing wrong with them supporting the guy. That's basically probably what their parents. I said, you know, I'm not a Trump supporter, and neither are you. So, you know, what you grow up around and in y'all, that's what you're going to probably go out and talk about. So, and she was like, yeah, you know, they're really nice kids. So, you know, I don't have a problem with them. I said, yeah. And then she told me, like, some of the things, like they get into debates, I guess. I didn't even know that. But she said, like, one of the things that shuts her friends up when they talk about Trump is the sexual harassment thing. She said, well, what about that? You know, he's supposed to be a role model.
Right.
You know, and he said, the one thing, one of her friends that's a big time Trump supporter, she said, you know, you are right about that. He is wrong for that.
I mean, out of all the people in the world, who would have thought that the big boss dog would be willing to make that change? Yeah, you special, baby. You real special.
Yeah, there's something for me about numbers, facts, mm-hmm. lies, and then statistics. But there's also something to be said about perception. Like, I was watching, I think Oprah Winfrey on 60 Minute mm-hmm. did an interview where she re-interviewed 8 people I believe she spoke to right when Trump got elected, or right around the campaign time. Mm-hmm. So Trump gets elected, and she brought those 8 people back, and mm-hmm. she basically asking them a year in, what's your opinion?
Right.
And I just saw a brief little snippet, and I should go out and watch it. But I saw a brief little snippet where it's asking a Trump supporter, like, what's your opinion now?
Right.
And again, it's thing about perception versus reality. And I think it was a lady, mm-hmm. a white lady, mm-hmm. and she says, the first thing out of her mouth was, at least I can say Christmas now and not feel bad. And then another gentleman said, again, a Trump supporter, he said, well, Trump said he was going to put America first, and now he's doing the same things that he said he would do. But again, it's the perception, right? Mm. So the perception is there's this attack and war on Christmas, and now I can say Christmas. But that's not a fucking issue.
That's not an issue.
Or the fact that to this guy, he said he was going to do all these things,
right.
and he's sticking to it, but he hasn't done anything.
Right.
So I bring that up to say there's a perception mm-hmm. about the way things are mm-hmm. and the way things should be that is so far removed from reality right now. The reality now is that we alluded to earlier is that there's 300 million guns
right.
in this country. Mm-hmm. There have been 7 school shootings, and it's February, what, 22nd, 23rd this year.
Yep.
There have been 188 school shootings since 2000. 200 American teenagers, mm-hmm. children, have been killed since 2000. We lead the world by a significant margin
right.
in these sorts of incidents.
Mm-hmm.
Those are facts.
Right.
That is reality.
Right.
But what is the perception? So when your daughter asks you, Dad, what's your opinion on gun control?
Right.
I mean, not just addressing her, but we're on a podcast or a platform here, as small as it might be. I mean, just brass facts. What do you want to tell these people, like the guy you're talking to? What is your opinion on gun control. Gets in. You're a gun owner.
Right.
You've lived in New York City, where everybody thinks it's dangerous, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And now we live in North Carolina, where, you know, people have guns.
Probably more dangerous in North Carolina.
That's right. Yeah. So when she asks you, what is your opinion about gun control? Let's just put it, this is me right now, right, on this day at 12 p.m. This is my opinion on gun control.
My opinion on gun control is, of course, there should be stricter background checks. Of course, you can't have, you know, people that are giving you red flags getting guns. I have my concealed carry. I could walk into a store right now, give them my concealed carry, buy the gun right there in 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have any past
felonies
or, you know, people with felonies. No, you don't want them having guns. The thing that bothers me about the whole gun control thing is they keep saying this mental health thing. Now, my experience with people that have mental health is that as long as you're not gonna hurt them, they're not gonna hurt you. Mm-hmm. They're more liable to hurt themselves than to hurt someone else. I have a problem with them continually throwing up the mental health issue, but that seems to only come about when it's a white male.
Oh man, speak up.
That does something.
Speak up.
You know what I'm saying? So I have a problem with that, but definitely, you know, stricter background checks. I think that, you know, if you want to own an AR-15, you know, okay, then why don't you sign up to go help this so-called war on terror? Why don't you go sign up and go over there,
right,
to Iraq, to Syria, and places like that?
But it's for hunting, Chuck.
I went hunting with a shotgun. You know, probably had, four shots. If you can't get your target in four shots, if you got a, you don't need to be hunting. You know what I'm saying? Go to the military. My uncle was in the army. Mm-hmm. And my uncle told me that those weapons have no place on the street, period. Those weapons should only be in the military. So if you want to own AR-15, so you should also have to sign up to use it. Because, I mean, what do you need an AR-15 for, or a Uzi, or a Tech-9, and, you know, those type of guns? What do you need them for on the street? Unless you intend to cause some serious harm.
Maybe I'm foolish, maybe I'm blind, thinking I can see through this and see what's behind. Got no way to prove it, so maybe I'm lying.
Because again, you mentioned you're trained. If you pull out an AR or any gun, the intent has to be, I'm going to use it.
Yeah, I'm going to use it.
If it's a gun, I don't know what guns are. If it's a gun with 16 bullets,
right,
I'm going to spray 16. If it's an AR, whatever, I'm spraying, what, a couple hundred? I don't know.
Yeah, you can get the banana clip, so you can get, yeah, you can get 100 rounds in there. Now, I haven't been purchasing anything lately. If you can't protect your home with a shotgun or a pistol, then
so what? So the question is then, what, again, perception versus reality,
uh-huh,
what are they really trying to protect, in your opinion?
Some people got the real problem. Some people think I can solve them. Lord, heaven's above. I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me.
Don't ask my opinion. Don't ask me to lie and beg for forgiveness for making you cry. Making you cry. 'Cause I'm only human after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put your blame on me. Don't put the blame on me.
Oh, some people got the real problems. Some people out of love. Some people think I can solve them. Lord, heaven's above. Blame on me.
after all. I'm only human after all. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put the blame on me. I'm only human, I do what I can. I'm just a man, I do what I can. Don't put the blame on me. Don't put your blame on me.
What is the fear that a shotgun is not enough, a handgun is not enough, I need basically a weapon of mass destruction to protect my family?
Right. Some of the fear is the exposure that has been, or the wrong that has been done. I think that there's a retaliation fear where they think that, you know, black people hate them for their past and they feel like they're under attack, so they feel like they got to defend themselves. Some of it is where, you know, it's just a macho thing for some of them where, you know, they feel like, you know, hey, I got an AR-15, I'm a bad man. So I think it's a little bit of both of those things that come into play when they want to own these type of guns.
I think I was in college when Columbine happened. Columbine was late 90s. That's a shooting that happened at a high school
Colorado,
in, I think, Aurora, Colorado.
Yep.
And that was my first exposure to it. But again, since 2000, a couple of years after Columbine, there have been 188, and I think they're measuring it based on the fact that it's more than one person being killed in a school or with kids around. 188. I mean, I don't remember, as violent as Chicago is, as violent as New York City is, as violent as all these black enclaves, Atlanta, I don't remember any of this shit happening in Atlanta.
No.
I don't remember any of this shit happening or happening now in New York City. So are the kids in those urban, quote-unquote, populations more civilized? What is the deterrent there that is not working in Aurora, Colorado, or where? And again, broad generalization, but I believe a lot of these 188 are not happening in urban, quote-unquote, areas.
Right.
So what is it about that population where the response is, I'm going to go get my shotgun. Not even a shotgun. I'm going to get multiple shotguns. I'm going to get AKs or whatever these things are, AR-15s, and then we're all going out.
I think one thing about, you know, growing up in an urban community or whatever, you know, guns really weren't that much seen around. You know what I'm saying?
But people think they are.
They
think they are.
You knew, like, you know, the dope dealer probably had one. You know that.
Right.
But it wasn't like, you know, your homeboy Greg and Eric, they coming downstairs and show you a pistol. Yo, let's go do something. It wasn't like that. So I just think it's one of those boogeyman theories about the urban community that they're so worried about the urban youth, which, you know, there's a lot more to do in the city. You know, a lot more things to get into. Mm-hmm. You grow up a lot faster in the city, whereas in these, you know, rural or
suburban,
whatever you want to call them, you know, they kind of say that it's for hunting, but I think it's a fear thing. You know, they're just scared, and they think that buying your son a gun for his birthday, his 18th birthday, is something that's okay. That ain't okay. You know, 18 years old, you barely driving.
Right.
You know, you can't even, somebody brought a good point, you can't even drink.
Right.
You're not supposed to drink, but you can own an AR-15.
Killing machine.
You can own a killing machine, but you cannot even drink. When I came up, and I know, I go to the city now, the kids ain't really, you know, talking about guns and showing guns. You know, they do that more in the country.
Right.
Down to where I finished up high school in Leland, North Carolina, you drive through Leland, you see dudes driving with the shotgun racks, you know, in their windows and stuff like that. You don't see that in the city. You know what I'm saying? And I doubt you would see it in the city even if you didn't have such gun restrictions or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's just like, you have to be more worried about these rural communities. I don't hear about a whole lot of gun incidents at, Southeast Raleigh.
Right.
You know, I go over to Southeast Raleigh, they got metal detectors there. They got a police officer there.
It's just at a school.
It's a school. Okay. It's Southeast Raleigh. It's a predominantly black school. You know, you don't have that type of problem. I go to Green Hope High School out here in Cary. I walk right in. There ain't no metal detectors. I mean, they do have a police guy, but there's no metal detectors. You know what I'm saying?
It's a perception versus reality.
And they've had a threat.
Right.
They've had a threat at Green Hope. Because my daughter goes there. They call you on the phone. Mm-hmm. Hey, this is so-and-so, Wake County. We had a gun threat, so-and-so. They get threats out there. I ain't heard of no threats at Southeast Raleigh. I got a partner that works out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk to him about that. I mean, and these are the schools with the most money that are the most dangerous.
Right.
You know, they're the ones that, I've talked to my friend about this, how hard it is for them to raise money at Southeast Raleigh. But Green Hope, it ain't hard for them to raise money.
They write a check.
You understand what I'm saying?
You need a basketball court, there you go.
But these are the most dangerous schools. These are the schools where you have to worry about most, the schools with the most money. Before you left ass up to a ball of power, south of the 1,000 miles per hour. Hello ghetto, let your brain breathe. Believe that's always more. Don't pull the thing out unless you can obey.
Because one of the things is, again, the parents, in the guise of I need to protect the wealth that I have, are probably going to own a gun.
Yep.
Kid, 16, 17 years old, smart enough now to figure out where the gun is. Kid has a problem. What's the quickest solution for a teenage brain that's not fully formed, functional to make long-term rational decisions?
Right.
Okay, you hurt me. I know where my dad's gun is.
Yep.
And the kid in Southeast Raleigh, again, like you and I said, I didn't know anybody in Brooklyn, New York. I was there for 9 years that owned a fucking gun. Me I never either. Saw one from anybody. But I will assure you, I have been working with folks in North Carolina, and they will tell you.
They will tell you.
They will tell you. I have one or two at my house.
Yeah.
So there's this thing where, basically, where is the real violence? The alt-right, they immediately go to Chicago. But if we are telling you, and this is one of the problems about Black Lives Matter, we are telling you,
mm-hmm.
two brothers are telling you who grew up in New York City, lived in New York City for a little bit, and telling you, I didn't see guns.
Yeah.
I'm telling you firsthand, I come to North Carolina and people just openly telling me, yeah, I have one at home.
Yeah.
As if it's nothing.
No,
as if it's not the most dangerous thing in the world to have. It's nothing. Yeah. I have a gun.
Yeah.
Again, if you have it legal, fine. You're not breaking the law, whatever.
Right.
But you have it.
Right.
And I don't know anybody in New York City who did,
right.
legal or illegally.
Right.
Maybe I was sheltered, but I didn't know anybody who did. So there's this perception of where the violence is. And then you mentioned the statistics that you quoted the guy this morning that finally went, you know, when he went, Chucky, you're right. Because people think, is the guy in the dark, like the Batman scenario, give me your money.
Right.
But if you have access to the gun, people don't consider suicide.
That's right.
They don't consider accidental death. It's still death. If the gun wasn't there, this shit wouldn't happen.
That's right.
It would not happen. I was watching, because again, you had me going down a rabbit hole this morning with the discussion. So I came upon this guy. I think he's a father, a white guy in South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
I mean, he didn't say it, but I think he would consider himself a libertarian, or he might be a Trump supporter. I don't know.
Right.
But he basically said, all right, I'm going to show you how easy it is to get a gun, because people are wondering, how does an 18-year-old high school kid in Florida go get an AR-15, whatever it is?
Right.
So he literally went on Facebook. He went in a group. And there was a picture of two guns.
Uh-huh.
I guess he didn't know who the person that was posting the picture was, so he had to private message him. He private messaged the guy. He drove, I believe, the next day or 3 hours later in South Carolina. They met at a church. They met at a Baptist church parking lot. Father gives the guy some cash. In a matter of hours, he owns an AR, was it 15?
AR-15, yeah.
And he's showing himself firing it. It took a couple hours, cash exchanged, no background check, nothing. And he's ready to kill if he wanted to.
If he wanted
to,
yeah.
So the thing is, if there are not these 300 million guns around, dude,
right.
then we don't have suicide. We don't have excessive suicide by guns. We don't have these things. And people always want to talk comparing urban black neighborhoods
uh-huh.
to impoverished third world countries where we think people are morally corrupt and there's something wrong going on. So let's compare like your president. Right. Well, not your president, but their president.
Their president. Yeah.
And how do the Norwegians live? Do you think the Norwegians have this problem?
No.
Do you think the Swedish have this gun problem? They don't.
Right.
It's the availability of guns. 300 million. And I watched these high school kids in Florida talk to the Florida legislators, I think in the last couple of days, and you almost see the idea of America just drain out of these teenagers' faces because they're going, this thing just happened.
Right.
Everybody saw this. You Florida legislators saw this.
Mm-hmm.
We got to do something about this. And I think the head guy in the Florida legislature is basically going, you know, well, maybe. And you know they're in the pockets of the NRA. So the fight is with that. So do you think we're gonna wrap it up here because the other stuff we want to talk about.
Okay.
But if the fight is really with the NRA, and I saw something quickly this morning where their president was basically repeating verbatim what the NRA chairman said in response to the Florida shooting.
Right.
So if he's in the pocket, if legislators are in the pocket, is this ever gonna change, man?
No, it's not. Sad to say, I don't think anything's going to be done. I know that right now they have a movement that's been, you know, hot and they've been getting a lot of attention, but all they're going to do is just, like everything else they can do, they're going to wait for it to fizzle out. Because these kids have to go, you know, back to school, back to their regular life, and that's what's going to happen. You know, it just so happened that this thing happened, like, seems to, you know, have worked perfectly for it on a Friday.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Where it was a weekend where you ain't got nothing to do on Saturday, Sunday. But now, you know, here we are, and it's already starting to, you know, basically lose some steam. So I think that, you know, there is conversation going on, but I think it's just going to fizzle out, and I don't think anything is going to change.
Something has to.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't keep watching people dying.
Yeah, I mean,
and our people basically getting blamed for it, and our people getting arrested for doing the same thing and not getting the defense of fucker. I grew up in a ghetto. I grew up in marginalized. I grew up in a mentally unstable. But when I react the same way this kid Dylan whatever reacts, they get justified as being mentally unstable. Well, every brother in the fucking pen is mentally unstable because of the way he grew up. Get him out and get him some medical treatment.
Yeah.
Help him the same way you want to help these people.
Because it's stuff that I saw growing up that no kid should have to see. What am I expected to do? Keep it moving. So, and that's what I do, you know, keep it moving.
I've never had to run through my school hallway or hide in a closet or in a classroom from a student or a madman that try to take my life. So I don't know what the solutions are. I don't know what the solutions are if I'm in a cafeteria, if I'm on the road, if I'm in my place of work, if I'm in my church. But I know as a country with 300 million guns on hand, one for just about each of us, the solution is not for each of us to pick up one and try to solve our own problem. The history of this nation is one of tackling the biggest issues head on and doing something about it. Not always finding the solution right away, but endeavoring to keep trying. Gun control is not an easy issue. It's not an issue that will be solved overnight. We're 220 plus years into this nation, and it's still an issue. It's been an issue from the beginning, and it's still an issue now. In this conversation today, Mr. Brown suggested stricter background checks, looking into the lives of those who really want to buy a gun. But I think the real question is, why do you need one? Who are you protecting? And more importantly, who are you really afraid of and why? When those questions can be answered in the hearts and minds of the folks out there with 2, 3, 4, 5 pistols in their house and AK-47s and AR-15s, then I think we'll move one step closer to the America that we want. In the meantime, inspired by the youth in Stoneman Douglas High School in Florida,
who are not sitting and waiting. They're taking action with the Florida State Legislature and with national leaders. On March 17th, high school students all over this country and probably all over the world will be doing a walkout in protest for stalled legislation on the gun control issue. Now, I can't tell anybody what to do, but if you're a young person who wants to do something about this issue, there's an opportunity. On March 24th, there will be a March for Our Lives concerning the same issue. The main one will be held in Washington, D.C., and I'm sure there will be satellite marches throughout the country and around the globe. So find one near you if this is an issue near and dear to your heart, at least something to start doing. I will add a link to the event at the bottom of this podcast description and certainly scour the internet for more information. Again, it's the March for Our Lives on March 24th.
On through, press on through, said I got faith to move mountains.
Gun control and all issues are local. Find your local representative, find your state representative, write, email, call, petition, protest, march, if this is an issue near and dear to your heart. Take action. The Ubuntu philosophy remains the same. It says that we are human only through the humanity of others. So if we have brothers and sisters suffering, an issue that I think we can try to make some headway on, we have a duty to try to do that. Again, March 17th, walkout, March 24th, March for Our Lives. On the Ubuntu Radio podcast, we'll continue to talk about these and other issues. For now, we are out.
Say I'm gonna press my way. Keep pressing, no way. Pressing my way, oh.